This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Philip C and this is the Breakfast Grill. This is one company you have on your speed dial but don't want to use it. But two-thirds of Fortune 500 companies count as its clients. Calling international SOS means that you need to protect, save and secure your workforce. With us today is Jing Tan, Regional General Manager, Director, Southeast Asia for International SOS. At what point does a company call you?
Thanks, Philip, for having me on the call. Firstly, just on your remark, the companies call us at all levels and not just when they need assistance. So, as an example, we are in a business of saving and protecting lives. So hence, it's not just when you are in a situation that you need help, but a large part of our work revolves around the workforce resilience of our clients in terms of provision of accurate data and information, advice on return to office, advice on traveling, mental health and well-being, advice on security implications, as well as vaccine and testing strategy, which is very topical. So yes, please do call us if you are looking for assistance to improve the resilience of your workforce.
But would it be fair to say that your business does thrive on uncertainty and conflict?
Not really. Our business thrive on the health and well-being of our clients and their employees. Especially during this pandemic, Philip, you will see that this pandemic has catapulted the health agenda to the forefront, and has led the companies to consider the health and well-being as the most important variable in organizational resilience and sustainability, more than that, yes.
But it must take a pandemic to force people to think that, hey, I need external advice and expertise to move this forward.
No, we have been very busy with our clients in terms of even before the pandemic, especially in advising our travelers as well as the site-based clients in the space of preventative, and we continue to support and provide advice, to our clients. So we continue to be, just to give you some numbers, even pre-COVID, we were doing 6.6 million users, in around the world, and we have roughly about 55,000 health and security alerts issued in a year. This is all pre-COVID, and we have got 1,100 health and security consulting engagements. We manage 2,200 medical evacuation response plans. Health checks, about 18,000, 3 million medical kits in a year that we have supplied. This is all pre-pandemic, pre-COVID. Health is very important to companies and organizations.
1,000 locations in 85 countries, over 12,000 employees, 5,000 medical professionals, 3,200 security expertise, to help workforces and organizations build resilience in this, perhaps what we could say, dynamic environment. And how do you differentiate yourselves from competitors then?
Really challenging, of course, and the pandemic has kept all of us very busy. Our work, first and foremost, is part of the essential services in Malaysia and globally. So just some stats for you. I'm not sure that anyone else could actually do this. So despite the pandemic and all the border closures, we flew into 90% of the countries around the world and completed 12,500 flying hours. That's equivalent to 200 times around the globe over the past 12 months, right? And this included, I'm not sure if you have seen in the papers, we actually was the first company to actually transport back the first COVID-19 positive patient brought back from overseas to Malaysia for our clients. We are the first one who actually did that. And then, we have stood up our pandemic teams since early last year. And we provide this continuous service 24/7 nonstop. And we have actually, our service has evolved from the early days of advice relating to pandemic preparedness, preparing from working from home. So today, we're now preparing our plan in terms of getting their workforce back to office.
It is really complex to get that kind of scale and mobility in this time, and especially multiple stakeholder engagements required as you are deploying across different markets. How do you make and get that multiple stakeholder engagement mobilized?
You're absolutely right, Philip, and this is also the key differentiator. Our network, we have been in this service and we're the market leaders for the past 37 years. Just on this case that I talked to you about, where we brought the first COVID-19 patient back to Malaysia back in December, this whole mission involved 3 pilots, and we had to have 13 overflight permits. So we had to fly over 13 jurisdictions, 13 countries, and 5 landing permits because this took 12,000 nautical miles and roughly about 3 days for us to bring the patient back. So you're absolutely right. As you can imagine, liaising with 13 government aviation authorities, as well as obtaining 5 landing permits with a COVID positive patient, is definitely a challenge. Our team worked nonstop 3 days, 3 nights to actually do that. But I credit it to our 37-year history, as well as the global network that we have in and around the world in the 85 countries. We have what we call a global assistance network team that works purely, Philip, building the global network of providers in and around the world, including contacts, governments, and so forth.
So a workforce bespoke concierge service. When you look at the numbers in 2020, you said just now it was pretty challenging. Give us a rundown of how revenues were last year.
We are a private company, so hence you won't be able to find detailed financial information of us. So I can give you a quick rundown. So our sustained activities actually during the pandemic has actually gone down in terms of the number of cases, and we are down roughly about 30% versus pre-COVID levels. But the cases are, of course, more complex, and time spent versus pre-COVID time is actually much higher. The good thing is whilst we are down in the past 12 months by 30%, the number of cases are now trending up month on month, which is, I believe, is good news for a global recovery of the business. We are also seeing quite a big shift in the assistance calls from travel-related assistance, as you can imagine, with the number of travels being so down, to really the assistance relating to domestic and worksite-related. And when I said, more and more because our clients' employees are no longer traveling, they are working within the country, working domestically, but they are also working not just from office, but also from home. So hence, we are seeing a lot of calls and assistance, domestically versus travel-related.
A deeper correlation with business volume and activity as we see ourselves getting slowly out of the pandemic, more of your clients are asking for your counsel, your advice on how to move forward, right, in this period of time. When you talk about your revenue, is it a subscription-based model or where clients kind of hold you on a retainer for a continuous counsel and advice? Or is it mostly, a pay-per engagement?
Well, Philip, we have both. So we have a subscription model for our workforce resilience where, what we do is provide advice to our clients in relation to the accurate information in terms of COVID, as an example, the accurate data on the country borders closures, lockdowns, testing requirements, vaccinations. We provide the advice on the return to office, how they can return to travel, mental health, securities, vaccine testing, etc. So this is really what we term the workforce resilience, the type of advice that we give, and it's a subscription model. Apart from that, we also do medical staffing at our work sites. So you can imagine in a place like Penang, there are many factories producing components. Running factories have between 5,000 to 10,000 people. We have some mining sites across the world, in Indonesia, Mongolia, that requires our medical staffing services in terms of physical doctors, nurses, and medics at site. So these are the ones that is not on a subscription basis. It's partially on a subscription basis, but it's also on a per use and depending on the volume of transaction and the requirement of our clients.
And give us a sense check, how much of it is recurring subscription versus the ad hoc revenue you get?
It varies across the region. Within Southeast Asia, we are primarily, I would say, subscription to 30-40%, and the rest is really the transactional medical staffing, really.
By shift back to cost now, this year you had fewer cases, but more complex cases, right? How is your cost structure like? Because I presume that a large chunk of your cost structure is labor or workforce related, employee related.
Yes, definitely. We are in the services, the work as well, and hence the people are our key assets. About 70-80% of our investment goes into the human resources.
And how much investment do you put into technology and research and analysis in terms of your total cost structure? How much of that is dedicated towards that?
Well, from a digital technology point of view, this is very much run the vertically at the group level. So I don't have the exact numbers, but what I know is we are continuing to invest in the digital transformations. I know we have a roadmap, our digital roadmap for 5 years in terms of where we want to achieve. But what we are seeing in the last 12 months, this has definitely accelerated our investment in the digital front. Not so much of five years. And what I'm seeing is probably within the next couple of years, we should be able to reach the roadmap that we set up to achieve pre-COVID time,
Where is the growth or the likely investment in people going to be to basically help you generate value for your customers?
I believe from people's perspective, it's really the reskilling, our people to embrace technology and of course, more important, to use them. Because a lot of the investment in digital goes to our delivery platforms. As you can imagine, I can give you as an example, we have, we are now rolling out a wellness app that is actually developed in Malaysia, managing the health sites of a factory, let's say, 5 to 10,000 people. Before, we would need to have a local clinic and with the local doctor, the nurses, seeing the patients and reacting, to their medical needs. With this wellness application that we are going to roll out pretty much soon, we are able to not just react, but really have a real-time data in terms of looking at the health, the pulse check, as well as having wellness videos uploaded. They can even chat with our doctors at site. So these are the type of investment that goes in terms of the delivery platform, and where it relates to people, then we need to ensure that our staff and employees and medical professionals are also well-equipped to be able to do that. We know 5G is coming in Malaysia. So as more and more, we are now able to have services, digital services connected remotely from the oil fields, remote sites that we have in East Malaysia, as an example, where we no longer need to transport people back to site, but we can actually use telehealth with the renewed connectivity to actually treat the patients on site.
Joining us today is Jing Tan from International SOS. When we come back, we will deep dive into their business further. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9. Welcome back. With us today is Jing Tan from International SOS. How do you price your subscriptions? How do you take risk into account when you price these subscription packages and solutions for your customers?
Well, we have a risk management commercial services team that look at the risk profile of the client, the industry they operate in, the population, the volume, the historical cost, the historical utilization. So this is how we primarily look at. But of course, we also benchmark our prices and our services to what's available in the market in terms of what the companies from their buying power as well as the competitors.
Your risk assessment seems to be based on current data, historical data. Do you factor in future trends, for example, environment, future pandemics? How do you bake in that into your future pricing?
Yeah, we definitely look into that. So if you look at our pandemic solutions, we expect this to be a more recurring event going forward versus a 1 in 100 years event. So we do look at the global mobility, global risk. And if you look at, we have got two key products that we share with our clients in terms of our risk outlook. So we do look forward, if you look at our risk outlook for 2021, and we also have the COVID-19 impact by countries and cities. So with that, forecasting and looking beyond what we have today and historically is key. Even during the pandemic, we even have a team that would actually project during the early days of the pandemic which countries would be in a dire situation based on the number of cases we had back then. And I would say that we have been 90 to 95% accurate. And these days, the same team is now looking at, with the vaccination in place, which countries would be going back to normality earlier than others.
You must be shifting your risk assessment very frequently, because if we had a conversation 6 months ago, we wouldn't be looking at the US or UK as in the right shape, nor are we going to say India was in a good shape now due to the escalation of cases. How often do you update your risk register?
Well, we formally do it once a year, but it is actually real time. So we have got this tool called Manager View, where we actually update our risk outlook and our security data and information from a medical and security point of view, pretty much on a daily basis. We have a team based in few countries who actually look at this information 24/7.
But it must be super dynamic, and you would even expect, for example, early this year, riots in the US capital. Clearly, we didn't bake that into the risk, whereas maybe bushfires in Australia, that was baked in, floods in Bangladesh, a bit more expected. It is a ongoing job, right? And my question is, how do you reconcile that with your subscription packages and pricing? Because there will be a lot of a misalignment in terms of what is being paid versus what is being delivered.
Well, this is, Philip, this is really our DNA. This is what our clients pay us for, for the past many, many years, right? So you're right in that it is very dynamic, right? If you look at, you use the bushfire in Australia, where last year was a big issue, but who would have thought that, the last summer that just passed, there was actually very little fire, but more flooding. So hence, we are constantly reviewing and looking at the situation globally, by country, by regions, even by city.
And environmental risk is, for me, one of the biggest uncertainties. But in addition to that, geopolitical risk is a problem. We've talked about cold wars before, but now we are getting into this hot peace where we have this period of relative peace, but huge hot outbursts happening in different parts of the world. When you look at the geopolitical environment, you look at the environmental challenges that are coming through with global warming, increasing pandemic probability increasing. What is the range of the premium or price increments that you are forecasting next year, 2 years, 3 years down the road?
That would not be significant because we are it's pretty much what we do day in day out, and that's really our expertise based in different countries and across different teams in medical and in security. I don't expect a large increase in premiums in relation to our subscription and what we continue to deliver at a very high level to our clients.
And just to go back in terms of your revenue, do you see a shift away from specific sectors? Because initially when you started off in Malaysia, a lot of your core clients were oil and gas, upstream clients. Do you see that shift to a more diverse broad base?
Yeah, we are seeing that definitely. Where we are seeing in terms of the segments that is coming up, for oil and gas, we are seeing quite a huge growth in the tech front, the big tech companies. We are seeing growth from renewable energies. A lot of our new business has come from that. And you would imagine that with the current mining and the commodity boom, we are seeing quite a heavy shift towards these segments as well, in and around even Malaysia, in and around the Southeast Asia countries. So definitely.
And we tend to associate you with corporates, but how much of exposure do you have with government work and even high net worth individuals and individuals per se?
Corporates, I think, if you look at the global 500 companies globally, roughly about 70 to 80% are actually our clients. So definitely the corporates. High net worth individuals, we have a division called the Aspire Lifestyles, where it deals with the concierge services. So yeah, so they will probably operate in that segment in terms of the high net worth.
How different will international SOS look in 5 years versus now?
I would say that 5 years from now, where we would really see a big change is really in terms of our digital roadmap, that you will see a lot more remote work, remote support, a lot more telehealth, teleconsultation from us in terms of our services. And you will find that we will continue. Of course, even with the digital space that we're going to continue to operate in, you will still continue to have the human touch from us that, that remains our key mission for the past 37 years.
On that note, you've been listening to Jing Tan, Southeast Asian Director of International SOS. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile. Unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.